Scrutiny Commission at the Charnwood Borough Council. There are a few things that I would like to remind people before we start with the items on the agenda. Please note that this meeting is being recorded and the recording will be made available on the Council's website following this meeting. Under the Openness and Local Government Bodies Regulation, people may film or record this meeting, and this is outside the Council's control. However, people wishing to film or record the meeting should do so in a way that it does not disturb the business of the meeting. Also, so that the meeting would not be disturbed, I ask everybody present to turn their mobile phones off or switch them to silent to ensure that your environment is distraction-free. And can I remind everybody that this is a public meeting, so please conduct yourself in an appropriate manner. Thank you. Item one is apologies. I've had apologies from Councillor Bolton, and I believe that's all because you're all here. Item two, minutes from previous meeting, which is the 7th of June 2021. Are you all okay for me to sign off the meetings? Can I have a show of hands, please? Thank you very much. And that has been passed. Item three, disclosure of pecuniary and personal interest. To be stated by the members, are there any, please? No? Thank you.
Can I see clarification? Oh. I don't know.
Sorry,
it's just clarification. Sorry. On item 7 because it's to do with licensing and it mentions my work by name. So I'm not sure if I think either work counts for that, but I've had no conversations about it. I have an open mind, but either work counts for it. It seems that it's talked about in this document.
Okay. We'll make note of that. Thank you very much, Councillor Hamilton. There's been no declaration of party whip that I know of. Right, questions under Scrutiny Commission's procedure 11.16. No questions have been submitted. Item 6 is the Audit Committee update. There has been no meeting, so therefore no update. Item 7, pre-discussion scrutiny for any specific financial matters to be considered by the Cabinet. Right, so the following item has been identified for pre-discussion decision scrutiny from the Cabinet agenda on the 1st of July 2021. Was that a cough or was it a... Does ring on then? Okay, so we're going to item 7A, which is a Nampanton Cemetery. And I'd like to ask Matt to introduce the report, please.
Thank you, Chair. So this report outlines some increased in costs that we have incurred in the contract to build the new cemetery. The contract hasn't actually been let yet, but in putting that contract together, we've identified a number of increased costs for the project. And in order to increase the budget effectively to meet those costs, we are seeking to buy some amounts from other capital programme budget in support of the Nampanton Cemetery project, and those amounts are listed in the recommendations in the report. Outstanding orders dictate that any buyments over 50k in the capital programme do need Cabinet approval, hence the report to Cabinet. So the increased costs that we have identified, the reason that the costs have gone up, there are a number of factors really. The first one is that the prices have gone up in general. That does only account for about 2% of the price increase that we've got. The main price increase is down to increased resurfacing requirements in the sports ground car park at Nampanton Road. The access to the cemetery does go through the sports ground car park, and we have to reconfigure that car park. The way that we were hoping to do that was to take the existing lights off the car park items that we're hoping to via across from different budgets are in support of their original purpose, if you like. So the first one is that we've identified 60k from the open spaces strategy. The construction of the cemetery is part of that open spaces strategy. The 80k that we're looking to buy from Lodge Farm Mugger, the Mugger is a multi-use games area, so it's an informal football pitch for those people that aren't aware of that abbreviation. That Mugger was intended to be a replacement for the one at Mount Manson Road, and we had initially intended to take that out to reconfigure the car park. Unfortunately, we weren't able to do that, and there is due to objections from sport England mainly. So we are having to retain the Mugger at Mount Manson Road. So the Mugger that we were taking out, or are taking out, is going to remain in Mount Manson Road. So that money will be used for that. And the tree planting funds that we've identified there, the 40k, that will be used specifically for landscaping at the new cemetery. So it will be used for the planting of trees and shrubs there. So again, that's in line with its original purpose. But we found for clarity that we needed to put all that on there. So we just could look and see where we are intending to find the money from in support of the particular project there. We have brought the report forward at short notice. The reason for that is that we are running out of space at the existing cemetery, and we are looking to start construction as soon as possible in order to mitigate the risk of a broken service there. I'll have to answer any questions that anyone may have in the report.
Thank you. Just one thing I might have missed when you were going through. Tommy, the 78k was Green Spaces programme. That's residual funds left from Green Spaces programme 1670. So you can keep, it's kept back from those years. Then.
Yes, that money is a residual amount that was left in a much larger programme from the capital programme we started in the year 2016-17.
And the 60k open spaces, I know you've explained that the cemetery is an open space, so this 60k of the cemetery forms part of the open spaces strategy, and these 60k, where would they could they have been spent somewhere in the borough? Are they community funding applications that can't go through now because it's been spent?
So this money was allocated in the most recent capital programme. We have an open spaces strategy that has an action plan, and there are multiple things on that action plan. It's primarily focused on improving the council's open spaces assets. There are elements of community work in there that this funding was specifically intended to be invested in our own open spaces. The exact allocation of that money towards particular projects hadn't happened, so it was a general amount that was in the budget to support the wider programme there. So there is an opportunity cost, if you like, Chair. Obviously, if we allocate that 60k to constructing the cemetery, then that cannot be spent on other projects.
And the park road resurfacing, fully delivered and remaining. So this is the sports ground car park. We've identified that needs resurfacing.
We have actually resurfaced that car park.
Right.
That project is complete.
Okay.
And that amount is another spend that's left over after we've completed that project. So that was done a few months ago.
Are there any more questions, please? Councillor Hamilton. And you remember to press your buttons, please.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. We've got a couple of questions, maybe observations.
Councillor Popley, can you turn your button?
report, there's two things that either happen. Either something doesn't get done, or it gets delayed. So in other words, although you talked about an opportunity cost, does this mean that there's certain things that won't happen, or will be other one or two items that are still planned to happen that will therefore impact a future budget because it's already going to be spoken for? Those of you, so it's going to earmark for the future, so that can have an impact in the future. Secondly, you mentioned that there's 2 years worth of remaining clause. That feels like cutting it fine. You know, it's, that feels like it's in the wire now. What is the plan B if there is a breaking service for some reason, it goes wrong and suddenly it's going to take a bit longer? I think those are the two key things.
Thank you.
Chair, we are at the point with the construction of the cemetery versus on the contracts and securing the additional funds is sort of the last step really. Until we do that, contractors are ready to go. I'm quite confident that if we get started on site reasonably quickly, that the cemetery will be completed by the end of March next year. That'll obviously give time for the cemetery to develop and grow before we use it operationally. So I'm reasonably confident that once the funds are in place, we can make good progress there and work in the scenario where there is a breaking service. There isn't a plan B, unfortunately. If we run out of space at the existing cemetery, then the people that want to be buried in Loughborough probably have to go to another cemetery elsewhere, and that's a scenario that we don't really want to enter into. I think coming back to your first question about things that we aren't going to be doing as a result of borrowing this money over, as I say, we haven't allocated this money to specific projects, so before the next capital programme starts, there'll be a bidding process, and we'll take a look at the open spaces strategy in particular to see if there are any funding requirements required to deliver some of the commitments in that and make another bid through the capital programme to see if we can secure those funds. Obviously that then goes through a member decision making process, and the budget will get decided there, and we'll work with the budget that we're allocated.
Thank you.
Councillor Popley.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Matt, for the presentation. Going on what Councillor Hamilton just said about reallocation of money, I want to build on that point a little bit. With regard to the tree planting, the last point on the table on page 8 of tonight's papers, it says to be a residual amount of £30,000 to remain support of the tree planting initiatives. Am I therefore interpreting what you're saying as we anticipate a £10,000 net spend on trees and plants, or are we saying it's going to cost £40,000 because of the fact we've got £40,000 moving across? I'm kind of trying to anticipate, are we going to spend low on trees and plants in the area, or are we going to go high with a £40,000 net spend? Thank you.
Thank you through you, Chair. The total budget for tree planting is £70,000, so we're looking to spend £40,000 of that at the cemetery on trees and shrubs, so that will leave a £30,000 budget. There is quite a lot of external funding available for trees at the moment, quite a significant priority for the government, and we have secured some money from the Forestry Commission to do quite a hard woodland creation project in Haverford, and there are other funding programmes available. So I think that our aspirations for tree planting won't be damaged significantly by borrowing this money over and support the project. And we will be using it for the purpose that it was intended anyway.
Councillor Brooks.
Just coming back to the original cost of the £889,000, I've got a follow-up question to this, but what was your level of confidence in delivering the project with that amount of money at that when it was originally kind of tendered?
So to inform the budget, the original budget, we did two things really. We've engaged with experts in constructing cemeteries. It's not something that councils do very often. You know, this is probably once in a 100-year project. So we engaged a specialist and we asked them to provide us cost estimates. The second thing we did was we did the soft market testing exercise to test the market to see what market response would be, really. When we did those things, as I said earlier, we had what a general spec, so we had the meter range of curb lengths, tarmacking and drainage and everything else. And those bits came back. I think one of the contributory factors in the price increase now is that we have refined that spec, more work has been done and it's come back as more expensive now than we anticipated. I think the majority of the costs are down to the unexpected resurfacing works that we are having to do in the sports ground, car park, and that didn't form part of the soft market testing exercise. And it wasn't something that was picked up by our advisors and specialists at the time.
So, what value has resurfacing the sports ground contributed to this? Is this the 23,000?
No, it's much higher than the 23,000. I haven't got those figures in front of me, so the cost distribution of how those costs have increased, but it is a lot higher than 23,000. We've put quite a lot of resurfacing allowance in that car park, so that we've got a good service to work with when we reconfigure it. So, unfortunately, I don't have that number with me tonight.
Okay. If I may come back, Chair?
Yes, please.
So, my feelings on this at the moment are just, it's a 31% increase over the initial expected cost, which is extraordinarily high, which we would have hoped, given the initial consultations, we'd have been closer to the figure that we're expecting. Given the current economic climate, or is it, if I go back to my constituents and say that we've spent another £40,000 on trees and cemetery, is that a useful spend for our budget? Are there areas that we're able to rein back some of this spending and come back with a lower proposed cost? Are there any areas to kind of make savings?
Thank you, through you, Chair. We have already been through a lot of value engineering with the contractors to arrive at the price that we've got to. That's taken quite a number of weeks, actually. So the figure there that we've got of 1,170,000 that the budget will be is based on a figure that we have negotiated and done some design changes to take some of those costs out. So the cost was higher than that. We have gone through that exercise of taking the costs out, working out, doing design changes and tweaks to make it cheaper.
Okay. Are there any more questions, please? I've got to say that it is an awful lot of an increase. And for an organisation as large as Charnwell Borough Council, I would have not expected that budgeting difference. But then again, I'm not an expert on that, and it must have been disappointing for you as well, and a headache to be able to rob Peter to pay for, to find out where the least damage would be. Matthew, sorry. Yes,
Councillor Rooks. Sorry, if I may just ask one last question. can be delivered to satisfy the needs now, with the rest to be delivered in the future, almost as a phased plan rather than doing it all in one go.
If I could just remind you what we're doing, it's recommendations to the cabinet, not going with something.
Thank you.
Again, through you, Chair. We have looked at phasing as well as part of the value engineering programme to see whether we could do something smaller and then build on that effectively. A lot of the costs are actually getting to the site. It's quite a long way from the highway, so the costs are reconfiguring the sports ground car park, road construction, and the car park at the new cemetery, as well as drainage and things like that. So there isn't really a way that we could do things incrementally to reduce that. The one thing that we did consider was reduce the car park size at the cemetery. So the cemetery does have a car park that serves as the cemetery, and because it's going to take a while to be used, we felt there might be some merit in having a smaller car park and leaving the space to construct more at a later date. Having had those discussions, we felt that was fine for people visiting graves, because that would grow as the cemetery got used. But obviously we have interments, and you get quite a few people turning up for interments, whether there's 10 people in the cemetery or 50 or 100, so we felt that the size car park that we'd specified was probably the best solution there. But we have looked at that quite extensively.
Thank you.
Councillor Parton.
It's just an afterthought. In terms of the car park, is it going to be gated off at night? Because I can imagine it's quite a secluded area. It's right for antisocial behaviour, people parking up and smoking cannabis and leaving all sorts of litter. I mean, for example, there's a car park on the edge of Grange Park, Allendale Road. Every day in the morning, there's remnants of McDonald's and canisters, because people that are engaged in that practice know it's quiet. So obviously, if you've got an early morning interment and there's a car park listed with McDonald's, it's not a good start to a burial, is it?
There is a planning condition on the application that we put a timed barrier in, actually, at the sports ground car park. That car park does get some antisocial behaviour at night. It's a nuisance to the local residents there. So as I say, as one of the conditions for the cemetery construction, we are putting a timed barrier in to prevent vehicles getting in there at night causing issues. There'll also be a barrier further on the road to separate the cemetery from the car park as well. So I think we're doing everything that's reasonably practicable to stop that from happening.
Well, that's good, that's excellent, because that is a car park. We really can't allow that to happen, and can we? You know, it's just a delicate time when you're turning with the barrier.
So therefore, if I've got this right, we are, from these funds, improving Nampanton Football Car Park and putting them in a timed barrier, because it causes a nuisance to the people around as it is now. So this isn't necessarily just for the Nampanton Burial Ground.
No, Chair, there are quite a few things that are happening as a result of the construction of the cemetery, associated things, but not part of the cemetery itself. So the time barrier at the entrance to the sports ground car park is one of them. The car park will be reconfigured. There'll be the multi-use games area at the sports ground as well. We are having to provide board stop fencing along the access road to the cemetery and along the cemetery itself to prevent footballs and cricket balls going in there, so that has enhancements to the site as well. part of the planning application. So it's quite a complicated project to deliver. hence, I think while we are in the scenario that we're in, it is disappointing that we are having to buy this money. I am disappointed, and you ask yourself what you would have done differently. At the time, my response to that really would be that we acted on the information that we had at the time. I don't think we could have changed it really.
Hindsight's a wonderful thing.
All I can say is that we are trying to manage the costs within the existing budget. We are aware of the financial pressures of the councils and this is an exception really for us. My team do 4 or 5 capital projects every year, and I don't think we've had one overspend in that time, or we've had to ask for additional budgets. So it's quite disappointing for all members and officers, I think.
Right, are there any more questions? No? I'd like to thank you very much, Matt, for coming in and explaining that to us. And I'd like us to, I'd like to ask, do the members here support the application? Sorry, not the application. They're going to cabinet this Thursday. And I have a show of hands, please. Thank you. Abstention. Again. Thank you, ma'am. Carried. Right, we've gone to item 8, which is, can we just go out to the, I was going to say can we go to item 8A, which of course we are, straight away, so that you don't have to wait any longer. So item 8 is cabinet items for pre-discussion scrutiny. Following items have been identified from the cabinet agenda, the 1st of July 2021. And that is item 8A, additional and selective licensing scheme, licensing conditions, pages 10 of your agenda. Councillor Mouser, welcome, and could you introduce the report? Thank you.
Well, this particular policy has taken 7 years to get this far, and we're in the final straight. So it's additional licensing, which is HMOs, and selective licensing, which is just in Hastings and Leamington Ward of all rental properties. Now, one of the reasons why it's taken quite a lot of time this year is not just because of the delays created by COVID, but because we wanted to actually get it right, because what's happened before with other councils, where they've made minor mistakes, landlords have in some cases successfully got a judicial review challenging the process. So this time we not only did the consultation process, which had strong support, but we did a second consultation process, which we weren't obliged to do, to actually consult on the conditions. And as a consequence of that consultation, and as a consequence of speaking individually to landlords who'd come to us, there has been quite a lot of fine-tuning. And although the landlords will never be happy, and I think they're a little bit happier than they were before. The reason why there's a further delay, that the public notice will only go out in September, is again, we didn't want any criticism that we were rushing it out over the summer and hopefully before COVID restrictions had come to an end, because there has to be a 3-month period between the public notice and the fees being introduced. And finally, the two key points. So first of all, it's going to be cost neutral. We're not making profits on it, but hopefully we're not subsidising it. And there were one or two complaints that, us poor landlords, we're so impoverished, we can't afford this. Well, the reality is it will cost, on average, we worked out about £2.60 per week, which is roughly 1.5% of their gross income, and certainly less than 1% of their net income. So the cost implications for them is relatively slight given the advantages that their tenants get. I'm happy to answer general questions and the technical ones. Alison will is behind me ready to step in.
Thank you. I'd like to introduce Alison.
Thank you. I just wanted to point out a typo. I'm not sure Councillor Parkson have already seen this. On page 22, number 11 and 12, I've got support and opposed round the wrong way. I've got it correct in the previous table. It doesn't make any difference to the conditions that are part of the report. I just thought I ought to point that out. And the only other thing I wanted to add was where we mentioned templates and guidance and certificates and procedures, I will be getting a set of documents that will be on the council's website that landlords can use as a base for the documents that will be required as part of the licence conditions. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Alison. What page did you say?
Page 22 on item. Yeah, on number 11 and 12.
Oh, right.
43% support, 54% opposed, they ran the wrong way, the opposing support.
So if I could just come in, thank you very much, with a question there on support or opposed, on page 20. Why are we saying sort of opposed, if we go down to external areas, why isn't it 57% support instead of 53 opposed? I just wondered why.
Because the way the grading went, it was strongly support, 10 not to support or oppose, then it was, so there wasn't a 57% put against it.
Oh,
this
right,
is the highest
okay.
percentage.
Got you. Yeah,
there
was a third.
Yeah,
third or fourth one. Okay. Thank you very much. Councillor Parton.
Here we go.
How many have you got, Councillor Parton?
Pardon?
How many questions have you got?
Oh, you're ready for this. To be serious, I think I'd like to speak on behalf of residents of especially Southfields Ward. It is hard to put into words just how much, if you've not lived in Loughborough, you've not represented a ward in Loughborough, just how much they have suffered over these, since studentification has got worse. I spoke to two people yesterday, both of whom, and this is not an exaggeration, are on the verge of a complete mental breakdown, because living in conditions like this, day after day, week after week, month after month, and then when you know the summer comes, there's a whole new cycle happening again. It is hard to put into words just how it affects all the senses. So, I'm indescribably happy that it's finally coming in. And the thrust of what I'm wanting to talk about is not on the, you know, the technicalities of the fire doors or the bedding or you know, gas safety certificates, electricity. My points simmer down to three points. That's ASB, the condition of properties, and waste, because they're the things that the residents have to suffer with, and that's not too strong a word. They suffer with this. If you want to go and see an example, go to York Road. Go and have a look. It's a pit at the moment. So,
have you got a question?
I have got a question. But that's important, because
it is important.
It's very important to for people for the sound recording to pick up just what local residents have to put up with. People getting no sleep all night. So, start from the first one, the external areas. Now, where it talks, Alison and Paul, about there's a paragraph, and then when it goes into the actual conditions, it's bullet pointed. Now, the For example, in external areas, it talks about how the garden forecourt yard passageway within the curtainage.
Could you
give me a page number, please? 29. Thank you. Curtainage, front garden, front area, or if it's a case of a Terry Street in the public highway. It's kept in a reasonably clean and tidy condition. No items are left outside. So the point is, if things are left outside, what happens? What is actually going to happen? So that's the first question. With ASB, now, the ASB talks about how repossession proceedings. Do you mean repossession of the property by the landlord of the tenants, i.e. eviction of the tenants, or are you saying we would repossess the licence of the landlord? Because it seems, from reading this, that houses of multiple occupation can suffer multiple bouts of antisocial behaviour, and maybe they can have two or three and push it to the limit that the university imposed before, you know, degrees are withheld. But then, of course, the new year begins, and perhaps the new set of six do 1, 2, 3, and then the next year that happens again. What recourse is there on the landlord should this continually happen?
Anderson, could you answer that, please?
Yes, so in relation to what action will be taken, in Appendix 4 on both policies, it sets out what will happen if the licence holder doesn't comply with the licence conditions, that we will take enforcement action and or civil penalties of up to £30,000. Now, the actual action will depend on what the actual breach of the licence condition is, whether it's a notice and some work needs doing, etc., or whether it is a civil penalty. And then we penalise again. I can't say exactly what will happen because it will depend on what the action is. In relation to what you've said, then said about ASB, there's two stages for this. If you've got a tenant that on breach of their tenancy condition, the landlord has an obligation to take action. But at the same time, if we've got a landlord that isn't taking action, then we then look at the licence. You've got to look at who's the cause and what action is being taken. Because you can have a tenant that's causing ASB and a landlord can do everything they possibly can to actually prevent that. They can serve a notice, they can go to court. Doesn't mean to say the judge is going to give them possession, but then we've then got to look at what is it, how can we support the landlord to make sure the ASB stops, or you can have a landlord that takes no action and then we have to look at it as a breach of the licence condition. Because it's been brought to our attention, we've spoken to the tenant or the other residents, and we're aware that no action has been taken. So there's a two-pronged approach there. It could be the tenant, or it could be the landlord, or it could even be both.
Okay. And so are we going to have a designated member of staff whose job it will be to patrol areas, you know, visually walk around areas, especially high student-identified areas, or is this reliant on the street wardens, or is it reliant on public and councillors feeding intelligence to you?
The licence fee will pay for staff to obviously get the licensing in place and to monitor the breaches in relation to the conditions, not what's covered under other legislation, because that will be done by the staff we've already got in the team. But we will be working in partnership with the student, with the uni, etc., to make sure that we all work together to make sure these conditions actually benefit the residents in those areas.
Okay. So the point I make there is certainly monitoring bins. Chalbrough Council's department is quite, well, it's understaffed. We see this at the campus liaison group where we're talking about bins. The problem never gets any better. And it's because, despite the fact that the officer I'm thinking of is brilliant at a job, it's virtually her and two of the part-time members of staff, and they literally just can't cope with the workload. So I've got doubts how efficient that would be, purely because of the lack of manpower. So one suggestion that I would make is that Sean would look to increase funding to make one of the contract enforcement officers a full-time role, so you've got two full-time staff, or possibly even three. But bear in mind, these staff have to monitor the whole of Charlton as well.
There will be a structure in place to deliver the lifeless schemes, and that will have initially start with, I think it was from the second report taken to Cabinet with two members of staff. Mm. As the applications come in and as we get more licence fee, then we can make the scheme bigger. But I haven't got resources that can just implement this until we get the licence fee. I've got enough to get two members of staff to start with, and then we will then go depending on the number of licences we get in.
Okay. And then the final point is regarding the bins. Now, obviously, there's two points to this. The first one is it talks about how it must have adequate number of bins. Now, currently, as things stand, for most HMOs, not all, because for information, what's happened is that over time, policy has changed. There was a time when HMOs could have as many bins as they want, and that stopped, and now it's really strict. So, you know, there's HMOs in Southfield with six people in, with one green and one black. They just can't possibly cope. So, is there going to be an audit where each HMO will be assessed? So, right, they need another black, they need another green, they need two green, so it's all levelled up. Because literally it is like bin lottery. Each HMO's got a different number of bins. And then the final point is, what's the sort of incremental approach? Should people just leave rubbish lying around, blowing around? And then I'll finish from there.
Thank you, Councillor Parker.
In relation to bin assessment, that will be carried out as it is now by the waste collection, and they'll get the number of bins that property is eligible for. One of the key things that I think has been brought up through my time at Charming is the fact that students don't necessarily know how to recycle, and they're not using the bins that they've got appropriately. So then we need to look at what training could be provided or information that could be provided to ensure that is the case. If there is a particular property, again, that there is an issue with the bins, then we would need to approach the landlord to speak to him to see what he can do to rectify that, and it could be that he needs to have a discussion with the tenants and ensure that they do know how to recycle, or arrange for further collections if he's got more people in the house than the bins that are available, or the space to actually allocate the bins, because I know there are some issues if you need more bins and where you're actually going to place the bins. So that would have to be done on a property-by-property basis.
Yeah, okay. That's going to take some time. So the final question would be, are we introducing a rule where all bins have got to be on the payment within 24 hours of collection?
I haven't got that in the licence conditions, and that doesn't fall under my remit, so I can't give an answer to that one.
So we could have the problem where bins are still on littering the pavement.
You could, but then that could be with any properties across the borough, not just the student HMO ones or the ones that are coming under the selected licensing scheme. So I don't know whether we need to do some kind of publicity as a borough to say, make sure you take your bins in. So I don't know, I'd need to speak to Matt about that.
Yeah, I think we're going to have to, because that's for information, that's probably the biggest thing that people can do now.
Sort of doing a frame conversation. No, it's not what I wanted to tell, carried away with thinking out loud, aren't you?
Well, you know, in Southfield, there's the highest concentration of HMOs anywhere in Leicestershire.
Okay. I can believe that. Mm. Councillor Hamilton, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm looking at page 14 when it talks about the licensee income will pay for the scheme, making the scheme cost neutral. But it also states the exact number of licenses issued will not be known. When you go for cost neutrality, the one thing you can be certain of, you'll never quite hit it. This is just not possible. You'll either
But throughout this, we gave, from the very early on, we gave landlords the assurance that the objective was to address the problem, not for us to make a profit out of them. And having said that so many times, I don't think we can go back on that now, tempting though it is for Councillor Barkley.
Thank you. I need to also point out that the cost of a landlord is tax deductible, so there will actually be no cost to the landlord. Alison?
And if I could just add, there is a legislative criteria of what you can and can't charge, and the licence fee is based on what we currently charge for the mandatory HMO licence fee, so we can't make a profit out of it.
Could I ask, sorry, before Councillor Popley, the fining, if you have to take it to that, who keeps the fines?
We do.
You do?
It's a civil penalty,
okay.
So we can reinvest them into...
And is it reinvested to be reinvested in,
yes.
This?
Yeah? Yes, it will be, yes.
Okay. So you could, from that, introduce more personnel for it. And, yeah. Thank you. Council.
What we could actually do is we could recruit people for a specific part of the scheme where there is an issue, so whether it's an ASB or whether it is the waste collection, we could focus it on that part of the commission where we have got issues.
Councillor Copley.
Thank you, Chair. I want to draw your attention to page 30, question 7, regarding the condition 15 references. And it also kind of links on to condition 21, which is the ASB and damage, and that's on page 35. It says here that after an individual interview, a grade student at the university would not have offered them a place if they did not have appropriate character, which you would hope is the case. However, we all know that references can be obtained, as this has been said also in this paragraph, by any persons. How do we ensure that a student hasn't got bad character, almost, and been abused and gone under the radar, and been missed, to the point where they might have, I don't know, not told one of their lecturers about them and got a reference, or maybe an employer hasn't known about their misdemeanours? How do we ensure that we are safeguarding about abused references? That's my first point. And the second point is, I think it's a very good point, I think it's not just in terms of this licence, it's just in general, defining ASB. All members present have gone through ASB training, and we've all been told it's very hard to define what ASB actually is. How can we ensure that, particularly those that look for members amongst the panel tonight, that we are on the ball when it comes to ASB? And if anyone approaches us in the area and says, well, we think there's ASB taking place, but we're not sure, how can we define that, or better define what we assume to be ASB, so that people can come forward and don't feel intimidated? They're my two points. Thank you.
Councillor Mercer, or...
So with the references, it's for the landlords to ensure they get the references. We will be checking with them that they have got them, and any good landlord would get a reference before anyone moved in and do the necessary checks. If they're using a letting agent, it could be that if they do financial checks, etc. So it could be that they've been forged in the past, then that could be picked up. We are always going to be at risk that somebody won't declare something or they've changed their name, or, you know, we're always going to be at that risk. But we would hope that all good landlords would ensure that they've got references and they know that the people that they're housing are of good character. And again, with letting agents, they've got various criteria that they go through. In relation to ASB, again, I think it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because, like you said, everyone's had training and different people can tolerate different things to what other people can tolerate. And I think it's gathering evidence, and with the university, etc., like HMOs, where there are complaints and the street wardens have gone around and have to patrol, you would gather the evidence that way. In some respects, it's a lot of the comments we got about, well, what do you do with your own street diary sheets, they can record, they can use noise equipment. So I think we've got all the things in place that we can utilise to make sure it is an actual ASB issue. But again, it's what do you class as ASB, because Council Partners mentioned rubbish, and that could be considered ASB because they're falling out of bins and things like that. So I think it's looking at, I suppose, the how often it happens, what impact it's having on those residents, and then what evidence we've got to justify taking the action. But again, we're going to be trying to mediate with the landlords and the tenants to try and make sure that this does work. If not, we will take enforcement action like we do currently. We will always try and work with the landlords and the tenants to ensure it works.
Thank you. I think the results from the consultation are quite good, really. There's been quite a big buy-in from the landlords. And obviously I've gone through and looked at the answers and saw what they don't support and what they do support, which is not very much. But how much of the results of the consultation impacted on the final policy, the final licensing agreement?
I think if you look through for a page 21 of the report through page 23, and that's for the selected, and then we've got a similar table for the additional. I've actually highlighted on there where conditions have been deleted following the consultation.
Oh, what page is that, Alison?
Sorry, page 18, where it starts with the additional on the table.
Okay.
Because some of the things that were brought up, and the whole idea of having the schemes is not to duplicate what we're already doing.
Mm.
And some things that I put forward as a discussion to see what should be included, we could cover under other parts of the housing legislation. So where that is the case, we've taken them out. So this, like these licence conditions, just relate to anything we can't do under another piece of legislation. So rather than it all being in one place, it doesn't mean say we can't take action in relation to if there was inferior heating and insulation in an HMO, we can still take action under Part 1 of the Housing Act. So there's all things that we put in here, and I have put deleted follow analysis of consultation comments on item 6, 7, 12. So I've tried to highlight where we've listened to what people have come and said, well, you could always do this under this part of the Act. So we've taken it out of the scheme, we streamlined for what the objectives were when they were approved by Cabinet. So, for instance, like selective licensing was to improve property condition and management standards in the private rental sector, improve the quality of our neighbourhoods to support safe, inclusive and cohesive communities. So in Hastings and Leamington, the selective licences covers all the private rented sector that's not already under mandatory HMO licensing or the additional HMO licensing. So we will end up with two policies, a housing multiple occupation policy that covers any property that's got three or more people in, and a selective scheme purely for the Hastings and Leamington wards, which covers everything that's not an HMO.
Can you see those special licensing additional special licensing being expanded
for the selected
area?
Yes, it would carry. What the reason we got to where we did with the selected was I managed to get some grant money to carry out some research, because what you need for all these schemes is you need the evidence to show that you need a scheme. So within the existing resources I've got, I wouldn't have been able to get to the point where we could have the inspections done to justify selective scheme. With an HMO, I think it's easier to say that you need a scheme. Again, the Grown Landlord Project is doing part of that work as well to substantiate that. But if you've got a property with five people on one side and a property with four people and it's an HMO, why are they any different? Why should one lot of tenants be protected by a scheme and the others not? So I think you can see the more commonality in that than maybe with the selective. But the Road Landlord Project, when we got the funding, we had inspectors go out, which provided us with the evidence to take the schemes forward.
Okay. Thank you,
Councillor Nurse. Yeah, 2 points. One, it's actually Hastings and Leamington wards as they are at the moment. So if the ward boundaries change, it will still be those areas. And I've been asked by one or two members. extended it. I said, well, let's get this one working first and then look at whether we can meet the criteria for future owners. What's also interesting about the consultation is that the responses for the additional licensing, the HVO licensing, is a significant number of residents who very much support the conditions. But if you look at the selected licensing, almost 75% are landlords. Mm. And therefore, those landlords will be amongst those who, the 48% who disputed whether we should have fire safety regulations, the 41% that said we shouldn't be insisting the buildings are secure, or the 30% who said we shouldn't be ensuring that they're pest free. And it's a little bit tempting to think that that could actually be the landlord suggesting that, and perhaps their argument, so we're all terribly responsible, we don't need licensing, is perhaps not quite as strong an argument as we once perhaps believed.
No, I did sort of see those anomalies, and you just think, really? You're arguing against that. Training, you've got training in here, and who would that be carried out by?
That could be carried out by Dash, by NPO, or NRMA, which is the National Residents Landlords Association, and the details are on Appendix 3 of each of the policies, and it sets out who can provide them and what the training requirement will be. And it's a minimum requirement, and depending on the level of responsibility and complexity of the problem, so again, if it's a family home in a selective area, or if it's an HMO with 20 people in, that you consider undertaking further relevant training. So it sets out that we expect them to do a one-day training course or online equivalent related to the management of privately rented properties, and then we've laid out who could provide that training.
Thank you. Councillor Parton.
To finish a point Alison made where she was talking about why should a five-bed house of water occupation enjoy the protections of licensing for a four-bed that's next door but one not. I would also add it's also the local residents that are also protected from the side effects of HMOs from that five-bed, but if that HMO wasn't licensed, they could create more problems for the community. So that also protects the community. So that's not just the protection of the tenants, it's protection of the community as well. And I think we need the word protection.
I think we recognise this, and I would like to also recognise it's an enormous amount of work that's been undertaken, and it's covering many, many years of leaning your head against brick walls sometimes, I should imagine. So I would like to, is there any more questions? Any more comments? 1 and 10.
Yeah, I'd like to place on record my sincere thanks to you, Alison, for your hard work in delivering this licensing, and also to that councillor over there, who I think I've worked with in the past, for their hard work in pushing this through. This will make an enormous difference to thousands of people in Loughborough, local people who have been desperate to see this introduced, and you can be incredibly proud of yourself that you're the people that actually pushed this through and delivered it for the good of a lot of people. So I'd like to pass on record my sincere thanks for your hard work.
Councillor Parks, have you actually forgotten Councillor HMO?
Councillor Slivers.
How can I forget her?
Right, therefore I need to ask the Commission here if they will support the recommendations on page 10 to the Cabinet. Could you show your hands, please, in support? Thank you, that's unanimous. Plus one. Thank you very much for that presentation, Alison, and thank you. Thank you. So that's been carried. Right, the Cabinet, item 9, pre-decision No, it's all right. I know where I am now. Progress of paperwork. page 110. Adrian, could you introduce the report, please?
Sorry, Chairman. Are we on item 9?
Yes. Oh, no, we've gone to item 11, haven't we? We've
gone to item
10,
Chair.
Oh, was I in the right place? I was in the right place. Yeah. Sorry, page 96.
So
it's all seamless.
Item 9, starting on page 96, is purely an information report for the Commission on the outcome of Cabinet consideration of items that the Commission has undertaken pre-decision scrutiny on. So it's really for information for the Commission to note.
Thank you. Noted. Indeed. Mm-hmm. Okay. I confirm that it's been noted. Right, item 10 is scrutiny work programme, which is page 98. Adrian.
Thank you, Chair. So, members of the Commission may have been involved in the informal workshop that we ran a few weeks ago, which was to consider the scrutiny panel position following the hiatus that's been ongoing during the pandemic. So the workshop came up with some formal views as to which panels should progress and which panels, because of time that's elapsed or other reasons, should not progress. So this is a report summarising the informal conclusions of the workshop and asking the Commission to formally consider those suggestions for approval. So just to summarise, mm-hmm. we're asking you to approve the outcome of the workshop that summarised in Appendix Annex A, asking you to approve the progression of the scrutiny panels as outlined in Appendix B, asking you to consider whether you want to maintain a record of savings made directly as a result of scrutiny committee and panel work, asking you to consider the continuity of the budget scrutiny panel membership, asking you to confirm that you wish the annual scrutiny report to be considered by the Commission after the first Thursday in May of each year, and that's time you're still allowed to go on to Council, and that you consider adding the bulky waste collection changes review to your own work programme. Going back to the budget scrutiny panel, the Finance and Performance Scrutiny Committee met recently and they had three recommendations that they wished us to bring to you tonight. So the first one was to establish the budget scrutiny panel for 2022-23, which will be covered if you accept the recommendations. That the membership of that budget scrutiny panel should be constituted in accordance with the Constitution, should be between 4 and 6 members, but that membership preferably should be given to the Finance and Performance Scrutiny Committee and members of the Scrutiny Commission, but trying to ensure the continuity of previous members of the panel as well. And finally, that advice be sought from the Democratic Services Manager about the current requirement that the recommendations of the Budget Scrutiny Panel come before yourselves, the Scrutiny Commission, before going on to Cabinet. And I think the reasoning behind that was that the Finance and Performance Scrutiny Panel felt that they would like, if possible, to also be involved in considering the recommendation of the Budget Scrutiny Panel, Chair.
Thank you. Has anybody got anything to say on that before I tell you what I've got to say? Okay, condition on item 10. Condition 3, I want to propose to remove that. That the Scrutiny Commission consider maintaining a record of savings made directly as a result of Scrutiny Committee and panel work. This is not what Scrutiny's intention is, to save money. In fact, it can actually cost money. So I would like a seconder, please, to remove that.
One second.
Thank you. It's been recommended that the scrutiny budget panel be between 4 and 6.
4 and 6.
And I would like that to be amended between 5 and 7. Mainly because I like other numbers. I think 4 is too few.
I think Chair, I would advise that you should vote on the your proposal that was seconded to remove item. And then when you've done that, Chair, I think it, just for the purpose of the minutes, I'll run through the three recommendations from Finance and Performance Group Committee to make sure you're all clear.
Thank you.
The response to those is.
So my proposal was to remove this, and seconded was to remove from item 10, number 3.
Yeah.
So can I have all votes in favour, please? Thank you. Unanimous.
So I think, Chair, in relation to the three recommendations from the Finance and Performance Group and Committee, I think when we come onto panel work, we have a budget scrutiny panel every year, so I think that one is effectively, it goes without saying that that's accepted.
Mm-hmm.
The membership issue you proposed, it should be between 5 and 7, and I think when we come on to the next item, there may be a way to make sure the committee links into the work on the panel in terms of the chairing of the budget panel. And the third item about the reporting of the panel, I think again, if we look at who chairs the panel, it potentially, when it comes to the next item, the commission will agree that either the chair or vice chair or the Finance and Performance Group Committee chairs the budget scrutiny panel. That will make sure there's a link between the panel and the work of the Finance and Performance Scrutiny Commission. So I think we've covered those three off, and then you just need to check, Chair, that having removed item 3, that the members of the Commission are happy with the remaining items of 1 to 6 within item 10.
Is the rest of the committee okay with all of those items, 1 to 6 with the removal of 3? Please show your hands. Okay, now we've got to the progress with the panel work. We've got quite a few suggestions here.
So, Chair, members of the Commission will note, starting on page 112, there is a summary of the proposed panels that you just agreed effectively under the previous item. So what we're asking you to do primarily is to confirm that you agree with the summary scoping of each of those panels, and that you also, if possible, identify chairs for each of the scrutiny panels that are on that list.
Right, we've already got the usually the chair panels are either chairs or vice chair, but we've only got 4 now. So that is in the constitution. But
so you're absolutely correct, Chair. The constitution specifies that the chair of a scrutiny panel will be either the chair or vice chair of the scrutiny commission, or the chair or vice chair of the Finance and Performance Scrutiny Committee, but because there are therefore only 4 people in the pot to chair the panels, and I think as you look through the list of panels, starting on page 112, there have been other councillors who've been prime movers behind suggesting these panels and doing some preparatory work. I think it's an option open to the Commission tonight to suspend the requirement that the chair of a panel has to be the chair or vice chair of one of the 2 scrutiny committees, pending a review of the constitution. Next time we'll review it, so it will be a temporary suspension to allow you to appoint other councillors as chairs of panels, pending a long-term review of the constitution. But members will have to agree to suspend that requirement if you wish to appoint other councillors as chairs of any of the panels.
Do I need to propose that? I propose that.
And I second that.
All in favour? Thank you. It's one of those knock-off things. You alter the constitution, don't you? And realise there's other things that you should have altered at the same time and have forgotten. I blame Adrian for that, but never mind. Right, so we've gone through previous to this, we've gone through and so that it can be chaired by somebody A, who has got experience of being on the budget panel anyway, but also can report back to the finance scrutiny group, then I propose, do I propose? Councillor Mia.
I'll second that proposal, Chair.
Because part of the recommendations are to have continuity on the budget committee, and having Councillor Mia there would ensure that it starts with that one. The next one is...
Probably just worth clarifying, Chair, in relation to the membership of the budget scrutiny panel, and again, to try and ensure that continuity that the Finance and Performance Scrutiny Committee have suggested, what officers will propose, what we will propose to do is seek expressions of interest from all non-cabinet councillors to sit on the budget scrutiny panel, but give preference to members either of the Commission or the Finance and Performance Scrutiny Committee, or councillors who have previously sat on the panel. So all councillors would have a chance to sit on it, but would be given preference to those groups.
Could the decision be made by the Scrutiny Commission? No.
I think panel membership is normally decided by myself, Chair, but I'm quite happy to consult with maybe yourself and the Vice Chair in the membership of that panel.
Thank you very much for that. Thank you. The next one is the Waste Services and Waste Management. We've recognised Councillor Ward previously, said that she'd like to do that, and that was to be supported with Councillor Parton, but we've got you earmarked for something else, Councillor Parton.
Yeah.
So
okay.
It's Councillor Ward would be approached. Would you approach her or would I approach her?
Quite happy to approach Councillor Ward, Chair, if
thank
you'd
you.
Like us to check whether she's happy to accept
and
the Chair of that panel.
Thank you. Right, so we've got the other one, and which is to be confirmed, and it's a formal, and that's Digitalisation and Transformation of Services. And this has been earmarked for Councillor Brooks, mainly because I don't want to do it. I have to ask him how to work my earbuds. So, Councillor Brooks, are you happy with that?
Yes, I would be.
Yeah, you would have help. But I know that when we were discussing it, I think you saw some opportunities there for our customers to be able to use a more... More involved pressing a key thing.
Yes, I've got experience in this area, Chair. I have to say that one.
Thank you very much. And Councillor Parton, combating loneliness. This is informal at the moment, so it's not had
informal powers don't have.
And we haven't got what's that thing we have to write first of all?
Scoping,
it's not been scoped. So it will be yours from the start to make it formal by doing that.
So, Chair, what do I have to do then? Do I have to write a scoping document and give it to Adrian or Karen Wilson or you?
Well, first of all, it's really doing some homework on what it's, is it necessary to do a panel on loneliness, and then do a scoping document from that.
Okay.
But
all
you won't have support until it becomes formal.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so until we accept it, is that the right?
Chair, I think it's perfectly possible for an informal panel to go away and do its work and come up with recommendations without having to become formal.
Yeah.
So if Councillor Parton wished us to seek expressions of interest from other councillors who may wish to support him, we'd be happy to do that. And then I think in the middle column of the summary, Chair, it sets out the very high level, deep, very high level summary of the work that we're suggesting will be undertaken by the informal panel. It doesn't have to become formal, that's my mistake.
Okay. If you would please, Ed, that would be great. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to highlight as well that Democratic Services are actually developing some training in scrutiny panels for members as well. So I think we're planning that for July. So chairs that have been identified for panels will be invited to that, so that can help you a little bit as well.
I think it was mentioned last time, there were some scenarios of panels that already worked and what you can do to push it forward. Thank you. The next one is promoting tourism in Charnwood. Councillor Popley, would you be willing to do that?
Yes, thank you, Chair. And Maura talked to Councillor Bolton about this earlier today, actually. Okay. And we're trying to arrange a meeting with Kevin Standing and or Sylvia Wright to get the ball rolling. So we're doing.
Did you know I was going to do this?
Oh, I know.
Okay. But that would be fine, because obviously it's been shared, thank you very much. Councillor Hamilton, you can relax. And so can Councillor.
Who are you? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm myself at the moment. So it's four at any one time. Obviously the budget panel starts in September, so that will be one that's ongoing, and the other three. But they can all go on without meeting, can't they? Scoping can be done.
Yes, so we can support up to four formal panels with Democratic Service officer support. Informal panels can go on, as I said earlier, Chair, informally. But if the Chair of an informal panel feels at any point needs to become a formal panel, then they can come back to the Commission, ask it with a recommendation as to why they think that's the case, Chair.
Okay. The scoping document that needs doing at the moment, and that is proposed, is for Councillor Bolton. But she's requested that you can have that, please.
You're talking about antisocial behaviour?
Yeah. Okay. Crime, antisocial behaviour and youth crime. As long as you realise it's for the borough and not necessarily just for the
borough. Understood.
Okay. Thank you. Do I have to do anything to propose it? No?
I think if it all Chair, maybe you can just check that other members of all the members of the Commission are happy with the proposed arrangements for the chairs of each of the panels as discussed.
Are you all happy? Thank you. And you know it, clap your hands.
Yeah.
Hello with children farting on me. Right. Thank you very much for your help and guidance on that, please. Thank you, Adrian. Right, so now we are moving on to item 12, scrutiny work programme 117. Right, thank you.
Thank you, Jeremy, again. So this is the wider scrutiny work programme of the Commission's information, because you are responsible for monitoring the whole scrutiny work programme. Obviously, the work programme of the new Finance and Performance Scrutiny Committee appears for the first time. Just for information, that work programme currently talks about them scrutinising the work of the Community Safety Partnership once every 6 months. We checked the legislation on this, and that's only an annual requirement, so that may be being amended to be an annual review rather than a 6-month review, but they are due to be looking at it in September, Chair, next time around, so it's on their agenda soon. And if there are any questions or any amendments that anybody wishes to propose, now's the time to do it, Chair.
Any amendments? Comments? No? Thank you very much. Right, our work program.
This is the Commission's own work programme or information. I think that resolve is just to remind you of the changes to this group new structure that happened at the beginning of the civic year. And I think, Chair, and sorry, or Ed will correct me if I'm wrong, we also have the forward plan of key decisions. So if you wanted to pencil anything in from that for future cabinet pre-decision scrutiny, there's an opportunity to do that now, Chair.
Right, do you want to go through it? Sure.
Yeah.
Sorry.
You can.
Just looking at the finance performance group committee membership, at the moment it's at 15, and I think there's discussion about reducing that number.
Yeah, that's in the paper we've just talked about. It's just gone down.
I think it was when I was ill, Chair, but I think, and again, Sally Webb will correct me, when it went to Cabinet Council, it was a reduced number.
Yeah.
15 was the original proposal. And did it go to 9?
Yeah.
It does actually say that in the background. Scrutiny Committee, with the areas responsible, blah, blah, blah. It was agreed that the membership of the committee be 9. As opposed to 15 as stated in the original appendix.
Thank you, Jane.
Right. So, key decisions. Charmed local plan.
It's really page 130, the middle of page 132, Chair. It's 12th of August onwards. That will be new things that you potentially could pencil in to consider.
Thank you. So it's carbon neutral plan. To approve carbon neutral plan, which identifies a pathway to achieve carbon neutrality.
Chair, can I ask something?
Yes.
Can I actually suggest maybe we take a summary of the Charmwood grants to see how they're going on? Am I right in asking that? I'll ask Adrian's advice on that, because they have been going on to see how the prospect of I just thought if I could ask our advisor Adrian Ward whether it's appropriate at this stage. I know they've started their second round again, but it would be nice to see the what progress and how they've actually fared out.
There are two potential ways to do that. Obviously, there are periodic grant award reports that go to Cabinet seeking approval to award grants. There are new grants. That would be Cabinet pre-decision if you chose one of those to look at, or you could ask just for a separate information report, as Councillor Ratson has just suggested, from Judy Robinson, as Head of Neighbourhood Services, asking for a summary position of all the grants that have been awarded.
Mm.
Well, the next discussion for the next round of grants would be go to Cabinet on the 18th of November.
Yes.
But that would just report on those grants, wouldn't it? Are you saying sort of paper that would discuss grants that have gone before?
I think it depends what Councillor Ratson was suggesting, Chair. As you said, in November Cabinet report will just be recommending new grants to be awarded to whichever organisations have applied up to that point. Whereas if you wanted a wider report, maybe all grants that have been awarded so far this financial year and the previous financial year, because obviously they're still quite new in this financial year, that would be a separate report that would come to the Commission if that's what members of the Commission would rather have, rather than doing pre-decision work on particular grants that are going to Cabinet in November.
I think if the rest of the committee are happy to make that proposal, a summarised version of the previous and the present, to see how it panned out. And it's just information, really. I think it's just...
It is interesting, actually,
yes.
Because Councillor Brooks recently asked about what sort of grants go through, and made quite an interesting read,
be able to help our residents who want to go for the grants in the future.
Sorry, can I clarify then, Chair? Do you just want a summary sent round by the relevant head of service outside the meeting to all of you, or would you like a report brought to a future meeting of the Commission?
I think sometimes a report to the Commission is more significant and more impactful, isn't it, on that? And it only has to be, you know, we can only have the written. Just come, whoever is going to present you, is Judy Robinson, can come and just give us a summary of the last 18 months, really, to see where the money has gone and things like that. And just, it's just out of sheer interest for the public out there, because they can see these grants and they just want to know where they've gone to. Myself, that's just myself.
That's absolutely fine, Chair. We can arrange for that. I think we'll just ask you which of your future meetings you would like that to come to.
Right, well, we'll establish a gap, a space. We don't know what we've got for the next one. So that is, what did I just read out? I've just read something out.
Carbon neutral
plan. I would suggest that we do need to see that plan. Mm-hmm. Yes?
Yeah.
Okay. The award of the Town Hall pantomime, I don't think we need to see that at all. We don't. I know that. Capital plan, amendment reports. Wouldn't anything capital go to capital plan amendment report?
I think, Chair, anything to do with the revenue budget and the capital budget and plan are now being monitored by the Finance and Performance Scrutiny Committee.
And the same with procurement, or the amendments to annual procurement plan, to consider possible amendments to the annual procurement plan, that would also, if it was necessary.
I don't think that's being monitored specifically, Chair, but it's purely a technical procedural thing to get Cabinet to agree for officers to go through a procurement process for contracts. I'm not sure what value it would add if you scrutinise that.
So then we've got the financial training strategy, which is not us, obviously. And then we've got the 18th of November grants. So that paper and November's not too near, is it? So have that paper come to that one as well.
So in addition to the summary report, you will. Okay.
Thank you. But our next meeting, is in August, isn't it?
Yeah.
So as to yet, we've got nothing on that in August, have we?
Not identified anything yet, Chair, but sometimes further items come up during the month before the Cabinet agenda, so I'll send out an email next week with an update.
Because I know we wanted to look at the weed killer that had been postponed, haven't you?
Yeah, a few items have been deferred, so they might come to the next meeting, actually.
Because there's nothing on here that could go to our August meeting. I don't think so.
Chair, maybe if you've got nothing penciled in for the August meeting at the moment, that's when you may want the grant summary report. If it's going to be a quiet meeting.
Yeah. Is that giving them enough time?
Through you, Chair, I can speak to the officer, but it might be not enough time, but I'll see what the officer says.
Okay. If it is, then bring it to the August meeting. If not, let's have all this done. Okay. Sounds like a plan, Sam. Right, so capital plan, general fund. We've got on this. Capital plan again, amendments to annual procurement. I'm going to be doing the same page. Strategic partners. This is for January. To consider recommendations regarding the proposed levels of strategic partner grant funding for the next 2 years. This is for strategic partners. I would like to look at that, and that's one in advance.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, capital plan, new capital plan, gone, capital strategy, general fund, annual procurement, housing capital programme, corporate delivery. See, there's going to be a lot of these that the finance committee can't get because they're only quarterly, aren't they?
Chair, they advise revenue and capital retrospectively.
Okay.
So this is the pre-decision. This is the decision that kicks in to force what happens in the future, and they will be monitoring the delivery of this, if that makes sense.
Yeah, okay. The last one on here would be the local development scheme to approve a revised local development scheme so that the programme for the preparation of planning documents for Charnwood is agreed. Reading that, I've got absolutely no idea. It's a development scheme, so it's building. Well, it's got Richard Bennett at the end, so it's got to be the planning.
I think, Chair, from memory, it's purely a timetabling matter to make sure that it is a forward timetable of all of the revisions of key planning policies. So it's not, all it's doing is improving the timetable, if that makes sense.
Yep. Thank you very much. So that's just two that have been identified, Simon. I think. Is it two? Yeah. Okay. Executive meetings to be held in Rhinebeck? No. Okay. Thank you very much. And that concludes the meeting.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. Well done.
Next meeting is the 9th of August. I think it might be a bit early for